Did you know that the Pop Culture Preservation Society is on Patreon? Patreon allows you to support our work by becoming dues-paying members of our society. We are an independent, women-run endeavor with a commitment to delivering the highest quality listening experience to our community. And so we've taught ourselves how to record, edit, and produce a podcast in midlife, a time when most of us are asking our kids how to regram a TikTok, so that we can deliver episodes that truly speak to you. Support from PCPS patrons means that we can devote more of our time and resources to the content, sources, equipment, software, hosting, and research that you've come to depend on without worrying about how to pay the bills. So thank you. We appreciate you from the bottom of our bell-bottomed hearts.
Just like I was evolving, so was my musical alter ego. And our friend, Carol.
Oh, Carol. Oh, come Carol. Back, Carol.
Yes, Carol was having an identity crisis.
Oh, no.
She was
going
to have to choose between Bruce Springsteen and Barry Manilow, choose the Police over Air Supply. It was some tough
stuff. No, that's tough.
That's
stuff.
Hard.
It was. 81 was a year for me. And you'll hear a little bit more about that as we share some of our songs.
Hello, world. There's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the big wheel generation who had too much time on our hands.
On all of our hands.
Yeah.
And our arms. We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we're still saving the music of 1981, but this time, instead of the Grammy Award winners, we're saving the songs that were personal to us.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
Back, everybody, to part two of On Your FM Dial 1981, our regular series of Gen X music-themed episodes devoted to the music of the 1980s, when FM radio had kicked AM radio to the curb and boomboxes replaced transistor radios. In part one, we discuss the 24th Annual Grammy Awards, hosted by five-time Master of Ceremonies John Denver. That ceremony was dominated by Bette Davis and Jesse's Girl and Quincy Jones, who got his first of many awards in 1981, and Rick James and Dolly Parton and Elvira. In part two, it's all about us. Today is personal, and Carolyn and Michelle and I are going to share the songs we waited for on the radio. We'll tell you who we were, where we were, and what these songs meant to us. And this is significant because, as we've discussed so many times on this show, the music that means the most to us is the music we heard when we were growing up, as if the songs were sticky and wouldn't let go as we grew. This is a scientifically studied phenomenon. And the age that tends to be the stickiest, do you guys remember?
Oh, I think it was it 14?
It's 14.
Yeah, it was 14.
It's 14. The songs that tend to stick to you the hardest are the ones that were in your life when you were 14 years old.
I totally agree with that.
And I love that there is scientific data backing this up. It means that we're not just clinging to something old. There's a reason that these songs are important to us.
And I love that the three of us are different ages.
Yes.
And as we know from Kristen being, you know, 40 when she was 8, we were all at different, like, maturity levels at different times. Because when we have an episode like this and say songs of 1981, we're all coming with different levels of maturity to this. So that makes such a difference in the songs that we pick, right? Like in 1981, I was 11 turning 12 in March of 81. So early 81, but still. I was in sixth grade, which for me was still elementary school. But, you know, we were like the oldest, so we felt super cool. which meant we listened to super cool music, at least according to us. And music was starting to become more important to us in sixth grade, and we could have conversations about it. To give you a picture of little Michelle, I had newly feathered hair. I loved ribbon barrettes. I went with my first, air quotes, boyfriend, but we didn't really talk. And I was becoming aware in sixth grade of all kinds of racy stuff. And I remember lots of whispered conversations and passing notes with my friends, kind of like testing out our newfound knowledge. You know, did you hear what Trisha was doing with, you know, Gino in the woods at recess and that kind of stuff? I was also realizing how desperately I wanted to be liked by a boy. Aww. But I was already terrified of that happening. And that's a feeling that would last throughout high school. Long time, you guys know that, and long time listeners know that. I loved hanging out with my friends, and we still played little kid games sometimes, but only in private. You know, my friend Lisa and I still played Flower Shop when we got together, but like if we disclosed that to anyone, we would have to, you know, kill that other person. I loved going to the mall. I loved watching The Love Boat and The Facts of Life. We all played Foursquare at recess. I loved going to the roller rink, and I loved singing in front of my mirror with a Tickle deodorant bottle, and I loved reading. It was a good time. Sixth grade was a really good year. Yeah. We were, family situation was good. So I have really good memories of sixth grade.
I think I still really like the junior high model, because I think sixth grade, when you're the top of the heap like that, then you have a much better chance of jumping into junior high and seventh grade, as there's a little more maturity there. As opposed to having like fifth grade be part of middle school or sixth grade be part of middle school. They're just little kids.
Yeah.
They are. Well, I was not a little kid at this time. You guys, as I was prepping for this episode, I realized just how formative and impactful 1981 was for me. I began the year as a naive 15-year-old sophomore in high school, and the events that transpired over 1981 would make it perhaps the most transformative year of my life.
Wow.
Right? Because in 1981, I had my first serious boyfriend who proceeded to break my heart many times over that year, and you've heard about all of that. I got my driver's license, okay? I turned 16 in the fall of 1981. I went to my first formal dance, my sophomore cotillion. And let's just say it was the year of me kind of trying on some different personas, maybe making some iffy choices, really going from like a kid to a real teenager. Really, seriously, I think the emotional growth of that year is unparalleled to any other year in my life.
Wow.
And my musical tastes were evolving too. Just like I was evolving, so was my musical alter ego and our friend, Carol.
Oh, Carol. Carol.
Yes, Carol was having an identity crisis.
Oh, no.
She was
going
to have to choose between Bruce Springsteen and Barry Manilow, choose the Police over Air Supply. It was some tough.
No, that's tough.
That's
stuff.
Hard.
It was. 81 was a year for me. And you'll hear a little bit more about that as we share some of our songs. But yeah, as I reflected, I thought, you survived, Carolyn. Good for you.
That's a lot of stuff, Carolyn.
Isn't that?
That's a lot. So in 1981, I was in seventh and eighth grade, which are probably my most vulnerable years, ages 12 and 13, when I had just started junior high at Fred Moore Junior High, which was enormous. It was bigger than most people's high schools, 1,500 kids on three floors with bells ringing and classes switching and 5 minutes to get from the choir room in the basement to the art room on the third floor. It was terrifying. It was terrifying. My hair was frizzing up in an ode to puberty, and I had no skills for taming it. A curling iron was foreign to me, except for curling my curtain of bangs.
Nice.
I would just curl them under. Feathering was not happening. Remember, we didn't have YouTube. We didn't have the internet, so I couldn't get the information I needed on how to make those perfect wiener rolls. I did not know how people got their hair to feather all the way around and meet in the back. Remember? Mm-hmm. It was a complete mystery to me. So I wore my hair kind of longish with curled under bangs, sometimes with little Mork and Mindy ponytails. Remember how Pam Dauber would have her hair down, but then have the little ponytails in the front?
Yes.
I would do that. Sometimes I'd make them into little braids. But more often, I would just pull up the sides with barrettes, holding each side up.
Yeah.
Thank God for ribbon barrettes. So I wasn't out of style. I just I was just making a choice that was different from what most people were doing. But it was really because of lack of skills than anything else. In seventh grade, I'm still a book nerd, and I will carry a book with me from class to class so I can bury my face in it before the bell rings at the start of each class. And this did not help me make friends. And by eighth grade, I make the dance line at school, and I finally have someplace to belong. It is like night and day. I had people to claim me. I had an identity that wasn't just girl hiding in book. And this is where all of my friends will come from for the next 5 years, pretty much. I'm also taking dance classes during the week, so much of the music I'm listening to is in the context of either a dance class or a dance line practice, and this drives my taste. Mm-hmm. It was always the music I liked. It was always the music that I gravitated to, even when I was really young, R&B, funk, and disco, and now I know why, because she liked to boogie, right? It all made sense. Mm-hmm. So let's get started on the songs that were part of our soundtracks. Michelle, do you want to go first?
Yeah. And I want to start with a little bit of a disclaimer because some of these songs released in 1981, I probably didn't really start listening to until 1982 because I'm going from age 11 and 12 in 81 and then 12 to 13 in 82. And that's a pretty huge jump maturity-wise. So I'm choosing songs released in 1981, following the rules because I'm a rule follower still. But I can't promise that I'm being accurate as to when had their biggest impact on me. Also, if you guys remember, and listeners will, I was in middle school in 1981, so I already chose my three songs. Like, I went from sixth grade to seventh grade in 81. It was middle school for us. It was View Ridge Middle School with seventh and eighth grade. So in that episode, I already chose my three songs that made me. We have episode 30.
Oh, yeah.
136 is called The Songs That Made Me, Junior High Edition, which me think we need to do another one because that was fun because we were all, so this is kind of the same thing for me because it's the same year. So I'm forced to pick different ones here, which is actually like a bonus episode for me. So who's the real winner here, right? Mm-hmm.
Me. We'll do a high school edition next and then we'll do a college edition. Yeah.
So I think that would be really fun, right? Mm-hmm. High school or college would be a good one. Okay. So I've divided my picks into categories. So category one is sappy love song / romantic category. It's a four-way tie. Don't worry. I'm not going to talk about four songs. I'm going to talk about one, and that's Endless Love.
My love, there's only you in my life, the only thing that's right.
I'm so glad that you picked this song. I'm really so glad you picked this.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear
that. Well, I picked it too. That just proves right there why I'm so happy that you picked this song. The fact that two of you picked it and that I am glad that you picked it means that this song was everything to us.
Well, this song, my mom had the album. So now understand, being 11 into 12, I'm still very driven by what music is being played a lot in my house when I'm not holed up in my room, which at 11 and 12, I'm not as much yet, right? So all Diana Ross albums played all the time. My mom had, this was also on like a greatest hits album. I actually own that album now. I play this album all the time, mostly for Endless Love. Even at age 12, 11 and 12, I was a huge romantic, and I have very distinct memories of duetting with a mystery man, but passionately acting as I sang this. I would get very into it. I believed the words, and I was so little, but like I said earlier, I'm just starting to understand all this, you know. I'm going to say boy-girl stuff because that was me. But, you know, now, I mean, girl-girl, whatever, you know, boy-boy, whatever your love is. I loved it. And the four-way tie, the other titles, just so you'll know that I'm not kidding, were For Your Eyes Only, which I think I said last week. I do still have my 45 from that year, and it doesn't skip. I love it. The One That You Love, Air Supply, 1981. Oh, yeah. I could put all Air Supply, but The One That You Love, I love, I think, the most. And Keep On Loving You, REO Speedwagon. That was my four-way tie, but I went with Endless Love of all of those is my, that's to me my, the one that speaks to me. Still to this day speaks to me.
Oh, that was the one that was launching you on your sexual awakening.
I know, but really, music, you know what, Kristen, that's actually something I've never thought of before until right now. I really do credit music for a lot of my sexual awakening. Mm-hmm. How can you not?
Right. It was like a blanket that was. Yeah,
and I'm not going to credit Bad Mama Jamma. I'm going to credit. You guys, if you listened last week, you heard Kristen saying she didn't know what she was singing. I'm going to credit, you know, my first love.
Oh, that line. That I
take. Oh, it's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'll sing that song loudly still to this day. I love it.
Well, coincidentally, that is also one of my three choices.
And it's one of the reasons we're friends.
Mm-hmm. I think so. And I think, well, it was your introduction to your sexual awakening. Mm-hmm. It might have been my chapter two of my sexual awakening.
My next base.
The next level.
You guys, talk about impactful, okay? To me, this was the perfect love song. And 1981 was the year I fell in love for the first time. Like, this was me. And they were my age, okay? I was obsessed not only with the song, but the movie, the book, all things endless love all the time. When the movie came out, I somehow convinced my boyfriend, this was at a part of our relationship when we were getting along, to go see it with me. And I remember he didn't want to, but somehow I was able to talk him into it. And you know what, you guys, I didn't really like the movie that much. But so thank God for the song. The song, the song, the song. It was everything. Kind of like you were imagining what the song could be, Michelle. I felt like I was maybe living it.
You
like
were
I was kind of like Brooke
That
Shields.
Gave me goosebumps everywhere.
Yeah, I wish I was living, I mean, my younger self wished I was living that the whole year, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. I was also deep into my Diana Ross obsession in 1981. I loved everything Diana Ross. I think I've shared with you guys that my high school and where I lived, Motown was a big deal. And so I was also really into Diana Ross and the Supremes, kind of my retro kind of music. And I listened to their anthology album all the time. And then Diana also had I'm Coming Out in 1981, kind of a little bit of a resurgence of her career. So I loved that it was Diana Ross singing this song that was me. I just felt like, you know, again, I was Brooke Shields. I was living this. And so I have a visceral response. And that's kind of what I used as my criteria for the three songs I picked. Like, when I hear those first few notes, what does my body do? And in some cases, it's a gut punch. And sometimes I get teary. You know, sometimes I want to jump out of my seat and dance. And this one is just, it catches in my throat and my nose gets kind of tingly. It's kind of all the things. It really is.
And what's so funny is, like I mentioned earlier, how we're all at different ages when we do these episodes. Everything you're saying, I can think of songs that elicit those same feelings in me from when I was 16 and thinking I was in love, you know, I was like 17, 18, thinking I was in love for the first time. And so I remember that. But going back to Endless Love for just a minute, because we just need to give it a little bit more time. Is there a song with a more beautiful, like just the melody, like the, and I want to share. It's so beautiful.
And I want to share all my love.
I used to always think it would be my wedding song.
That first line that you said, my first love, the opening of, and the way she just lets it linger, my first love, like she just says that and lets it linger. And we all are either on the verge of or wanting or in the midst of our first love. Mm-hmm. And I think the song was the phenomenon, right? We were all about the movie. We were all about the book. But like you said, Carolyn, the movie was a little disappointing. We wanted the story that Lionel Richie and Diana Ross were selling.
Yes.
That was the story that we wanted.
I get so mushy.
So my first song pick is the song Kiss on My List by Hall & Oates.
That song.
This is the song that was playing when the whole family piled into the car to take our yellow Ford Fiesta for a spin. because this was in response to the gas shortage. Remember, we were all buying these tiny little cars, and suddenly good gas mileage was a thing. And for a while, this was our only car. We only had this tiny little Ford Fiesta. So this tiny little yellow roller skate, we'd have like three kids smashed in the back seat. I even remember piling extended family members in the back seat, like maybe put my sister in the back window or something. I have no idea how we did it. This is the soundtrack to that car. I don't even really know why, except maybe I was getting driven around a lot at that time and the radio was on a lot. This is the car that I also learned to drive on. Stick shift, of course. This is the car that drove me to dance classes, picked me up at friends' houses. I remember one time waiting to get picked up after school. It would have been like after practice or something like that because it was desolate. It was empty. There was nobody around. And I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm waiting. And my mom was like an hour late or something ridiculous. And I finally went into the school just praying that the office was still open so I could ask to borrow the phone. I call home, nobody answers, so I go back outside just as I see that little yellow Fiesta pulling away from the curb and driving away without me.
Oh, no.
And I just remember standing there watching it drive away and being like, mother effer! Yes. I had no recourse, nothing. Like, all I could do was sit on that bench for another hour and wait for somebody to figure out. To That's come right. back and
Can
get me.
Can we just stop there for a second? I don't know if we have any younger listeners. Do you understand this, people? There was no texting. There was no immediate way to say, Mom, turn around. I was just in the building. Uh-uh. You were sitting out there for another hour until your mom figured maybe she was inside the building when I went by.
Yeah.
Linda's probably listening to this, though, and going, Kristen, it was 10 minutes.
It was 10 minutes. That never happened. I would never have left you alone like that. Well, and then when eventually the office is going to close and I will have access to no phone. And I don't have a quarter, so I can't walk to the Applebaum's to use the payphone. Mm-hmm. I literally have zero recourse. There is no way to contact my people. And there was nobody home to answer the phone anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Eventually they came and got me, but I think it was dark by that time. I just remember watching that little yellow car going putt, 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 putt up the hill without me. No!
Can I just share one of the times that my mom forgot to pick me up? And it was soul-crushing because it was right before holiday Christmas break, and I was the person who got to take home the pet mice. So I had this huge, like, aquarium, but it was filled with, like, that hay stuff and these little mice. And I'm just standing there in front of my school building, and there is no mother and all the buses. I was, like, left by myself. And I usually walked home, so it was a little different that I'm sure my mom just obviously forgot and just thought I was walking home. So I had to go into the office.
Yeah.
And, and then I got them not just for a weekend, but for like 2 weeks.
That's a lot.
Because my mom was never going to let us get a hamster or anything like that. This is as close as I was going to get to a furry little friend like that. But yeah, I was just out there holding this heavy thing and like the water bottle thing and all that in the bag of food.
You could have set it down. Why didn't you set it down?
Well, she was just she's coming the
any
corner.
Minute. Yes. Yes. Coming. Exactly she's coming. She's right. coming any minute.
Exactly
any
right.
Minute. Yes.
Exactly right.
So this song, Kiss on My List, it's actually a very misinterpreted song in a couple of ways. First, raise your hand if you actually initially thought the song was Kiss on My Lips.
No. I don't think I ever thought that.
I knew it was Kiss on My Lips.
Sorry.
I for sure thought it was Kiss on My Lips.
I can see that, though.
Yeah. Because your kiss is on my lips.
My lips.
Everybody else. Okay, everybody except you guys thought it was Kiss on My Lips. But eventually the song became very well known and we knew that it was Kiss on My List. And we all think that it's a really happy love song, right? No, it is not. Because according to Daryl Hall, it is what he calls an anti-love song. And the lyric, your kiss is on my list of the best things in life, really means that the kiss is simply another item on this guy's list. Like, yeah, it's on the list. But it's not even the best thing in life, right? It's just on the list of a whole bunch of other things. And Daryl Hall actually says it's the very opposite of, I love you and I would die without you. It's more like, yeah, I guess I love you, but if I didn't have you, I have a whole bunch of other things on this list.
Wait, that's Carolyn's boyfriend's song then.
Yes.
Right? I'm thinking the boyfriend she's referencing, that was probably his song.
I thought it was like a compliment. Like,
yes,
you're one of the best things in life.
Why would you write a song about like a total dick.
Dude, why even write this song? Like, why is that even a thing that you need to express? So I reject this, and I will continue to carry it in my heart as a happy-go-lucky Ford Fiesta song. And it's clear that the rest of the world is with me on this, including Eddie Van Halen, who told Daryl Hall that he actually stole the synth part of Kiss on My List and used it in their biggest hit, Jump.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
You can hear that. Oh, that's
I just like that he admitted, he's like, dude, I stole your song. Here is another fun fact. So the song was written by Daryl Hall's girlfriend's sister. So it was written by Sarah of Sarah Smile's sister. And before this, Sarah Smile's sister had never written a song before. This was the first song she ever wrote, and she hit a home run. Yeah. In fact, it was such a perfect song that they quickly like, sit down. They just recorded a janky demo, like really, really fast. And they sent it off to the record company just to see, what do you think? Do you like the song? Should we record it? And they were like, do not re-record this. This is what we're releasing. Their janky demo is what we know as Kiss on My List. And Daryl Hall said, this is the best quote. He said, that's why the drum machine is so dicky and all that stuff. It was really not meant for primetime.
Wow.
But yet it was a huge hit.
Huge hit. The first song she's ever written.
Yeah.
Wow. Did she go on to write any more?
She did. She was their songwriting partner for a very long time. Their whole comeback essentially in the 80s is due to her. Her name is Jana. And then sadly, she died of leukemia. It's the saddest story.
I think we've talked about this.
Yes, we have because it like chokes me up completely. She died and it destroyed all of their relationships. Like he and Sarah Smile eventually had to break up because their grief was too great and they couldn't get over it.
Oh, understandable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Michelle, what's your next
song? Okay. Well, my next song, remember I said I'm doing categories? My next category is friends, because when you're 11, turning 12, and in the sixth grade, your friends are a huge part of your life. And like I said, your friendships are evolving too, along with your maturity level. So I do have a tie, but it's okay because it's the same thing. My tie is both songs by The Police. I'm picking Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. The reason I'm choosing both of those songs is because one of my closest friends at the time, besides Lisa, was Kristen. And I think I've talked about Kristen before, also spelled with an I-N, like you, Kristen. And she was obsessed with The Police. This was before our shared obsession with Duran Duran. If you'll remember, she was Nick Rhodes' wife. If you go back, listeners, to our letter writing episode, and I read the whole letter from Nick Rhodes' wife, that's Kristen. So she was obsessed with The Police. And that was a little cutting edge in sixth grade to be that obsessed with The Police, and especially Sting. And let's go back to 1981 Sting. I just saw him last year at Red Rocks, and you guys, he still looks phenomenal, sounds phenomenal, plays the guitar. It is like we're watching 1981 Sting.
Wow.
We were, and he's coming back in April, and tickets sold out like in a minute, but we're going to figure out a way to get him. My husband, huge, humongous Police fan. But the reason I chose this is because to this day, I still think of Kristen when I hear an old Police song. And it just brings me back to that feeling of hanging out with her in her rainbow painted bedroom. And it just conjures up those first friendships that were so important in your life that stretched from elementary school to middle school to high school.
Wow.
And how we evolved. We went from prepubescent kids together. And you guys know this is really important to me because I moved so much. But that 5-year stint in Ridgefield, Washington was fifth grade through the end of ninth grade. And that is a really, really kind of critical era of your development, right? So I'm so glad that I was in one place for that time so that I could have these constant friendships. So like with Kristen and with Lisa, you know, we went from kids singing songs like in fifth grade and loving songs to then loving them for different reasons, like Hello Sting, right? And then that evolved into Duran Duran, and we're loving them. So we would sit and just listen to music, and that in sixth grade. because she loved the Police. And so that was very different than like maybe we played in fifth grade. Mm-hmm. But so to me, that when I saw those songs were on the 1981 list, I was immediately like, oh, those have to be in my one Police song at least should be in my top three, because it takes me right back there. And to this day, I go back to her room when I hear one of those.
And that's very much like in our previous Grammy episode, I talked about how the music of that time was so singular and unique and was constantly catching our attention, unlike some of the music today that might feel more like genre music or more like wallpaper. And the Police is the perfect example of that. That when we heard the Police for the first time, can you remember the first time you heard da-do-do-do, da-da-da-da-da? You had never heard anything like that. Yeah. Everything was brand new and fresh and interesting and was so – and that's part of why it sticks with us too. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the more wallpaper music is going to stick with our kids in the same way. I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe it will. I don't know.
Time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my next choice is – The Best of Times by Styx.
Tonight's the night we'll make history. Honey, you and I. 'Cause I'll take any risk to tie back the hands.
These are the best of times. Wow, that was so... Did you guys hear that harmony?
We all chose a different part.
I know. I took like the high.
I don't even know. I don't even know how to do a harmony. I just
you accidentally sang harmony.
Oh, gosh, that's exciting. Yeah, and if you remember, there's just some first few piano notes that start that song. And when I hear those, I am literally like sucked back in time. I know I talk about this image a lot on the podcast, but like I'm in this kind of vortex that's sucking me and, you know, I'm spinning like, you know, when people are like dreaming. Yeah. And I'm just going back in time and I'm plopped onto my bed, my Marimekko inspired comforter, because it was actually from JCPenney. And I can see my bedroom. I can see my bedroom so clearly. I can feel truly what I was feeling back then at that when I was listening to this music. And that was heartbroken. Oh. Sad. This song was probably the standout one from what I might call my bedroom blues playlist. The soundtrack that accompanies the heartbreak of that year and the hours I spent in my bedroom just feeling that specific kind of grief that comes from a broken heart, and you're wishing and you're praying that things would just change, that things would be different. So I'm thumbing through all the, you know, notes he'd ever written me and the cards he'd sent me and, you know, the flowers that were, you know, the petals are dropping, but it's still on my desk. The nights that I would be looking out the window, I could see from one of the windows in my bedroom, the end of my street. And there would be a night or two or 10 where my then boyfriend not would say, oh, I'm coming over. I'll come get you. I'm on my way. And I would have music on and the night would just get longer. And I'd just be looking out that window waiting for headlights to make the turn. And every once in a while there would be some headlights and they wouldn't be the headlights. So there is a whole soundtrack, this being one of the main songs, that just was accompanying that time in my life, that I can see the carpet on the floor. I would just be sitting against my bed on the floor, just so sad.
Oh,
so,
waiting, the waiting.
The waiting, yes, and the hoping and the, okay, you know, I would always be making deals with
that. I was just about to say that, bargaining. Like,
yes, always the bargaining. I'll make my bed every morning with whatever. I'll, you know, study an hour every night for Spanish, all the things.
I would do things like, I'm going to start counting to 50. If I get to 50 and the phone doesn't ring, I'm going to just go out and watch TV. Yeah. And then you'd get to 50 and go, I'm just going to count to 50 one more time.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you. Solitaire. Yeah. That would be a thing I would do. I would play solitaire. If I win this game of solitaire, that's it. Like, he'll be the next car around the corner or whatever. And I can't tell you how many games of solitaire I played.
Oh,
and
like,
best of
the
three.
The world champion. Solitaire.
Well, and just to turn that around, can you, I'll ask Michelle. Michelle, can you imagine Carolyn ever telling somebody, I'll come pick you up, and then not?
No, Carolyn is like the most reliable person. And
she would never do that. Like, it's just hard to imagine being a person in the world and saying you're going to come pick somebody up and then just not.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and it was always, you know, he didn't well, never mind. It was, yeah, just a lot of unkept promises. Let's just say that's kind of what it was.
And this is so ironic. This music is the soundtrack to that, and it makes you so melancholy. And the title of it is the best times. It hurts.
Yes, it does. It hurts a lot. But I kept thinking, like, okay, they're right around the corner of the best of times. Like, this is this next time we're back together, that this will be the time. Like, we won't ever break up again. This is our endless love.
And you have this at this time in your life. You are always told that this is the best time of your life. High school is the best time of your life. You're having the time of your life. And that doesn't incorporate the heartbreak. And so you're sitting in a time that you know is supposed to be the best time of your life. And that's part of what you're clinging to. You're waiting to see the headlights because you know that's what the best of the best times are. Mm-hmm. And if somebody said high school totally sucks, you might have been like, screw it, I'm going to go watch Love Boat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you were trying to create something because everyone expected it to be so.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think that was, you know how I am about what everyone thinks and what it's supposed to be. And that was just something I really thought I wanted. I mean, of course, looking back, we know what we know now. But I would have done a lot of things to keep that going.
You and me both, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We'll have a special club.
Hey, listeners, it's Carolyn. And I wanted to check in. It's 2025, you guys. How's everybody feeling? Well, I know for me, sometimes all of these hormonal changes that many of us are going through can be a real pain. And while there are natural hormonal changes that are going on through our bodies, did you know that there are also more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now? Yes, disruptors that can affect actually how our hormones function. They're in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare. And they all mess with our hormones. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through all of this anymore because now there's Hormone Harmony. And you've heard me talk about it. It's a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. You've heard me talk about how that menopause-induced brain fog has really messed with me at times, but I've really noticed a difference since I've taken Hormone Harmony, and even my sleep habits have gotten better. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is truly dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means they only use science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and we are so excited to partner with Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today.
Hello, listeners. Today's episode is brought to you by Armoire, the clothing rental and return company that Carolyn and Michelle and I have been using for just a little over 6 months now. Armoire makes getting dressed easy and a lot more fun. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build a more exciting wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz, select items you like, and the clothes show up at your door in just 2 days. Then, when you're ready for something different, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. In the past, I've fallen victim to the fast fashion addiction. It truly is an addiction, grabbing that cute t-shirt off the rack as I walk by with my cart, because it's only $10. But we all know what happens. That $10 t-shirt goes in the giveaway pile 6 months later because it now looks like a dish rag. Armoire allows me to indulge in higher quality materials that look so much better, and they feel better too. Armoire also allows me to take some risks and maybe try out a style I wouldn't normally commit to, because I don't have to commit to it. I borrow it, try it out, see how I feel, and send it back. Right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/PCPS. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/PCPS to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. My song, my next song, this is a dance jam. This is a personal jam. This is a personal banger for me. I'm Coming Out from Diana Ross's eponymous 1980 album, Diana.
I'm coming out.
The song actually peaked on the charts in November of 1980, but it was still the 98th biggest selling song of 1981. And mm-hmm. that's when I remember it, from second semester of seventh grade in general music with Ms. Geib. Ms. Geib was very aware that she needed to pay attention to popular music so she wouldn't lose our attention, because general music was for the losers who weren't in band or orchestra. Nobody wanted to be there, and she knew that. So she had to be tricky. And so I got to study the songs from Diana for an actual homework assignment, like a book report. It was an album report.
I love that.
To her credit. Way to go, Ms. Geib. Yes. So Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards from the band Chic wrote this song and produced it. And Nile Rodgers said that he got the idea when he went to a gay club in New York City. He went into the bathroom, and while he was standing at the urinal, he saw three men dressed in drag as Diana Ross. And it was like, light bulb. He started to understand that she had a cult following in the gay community, and he wanted to harness that. So this song is very purposefully and overtly written to celebrate coming out of the closet and being openly gay. As a junior high kid, I did not have this language. I just thought that it was Diana Ross and her arrival on the scene, right? It was an uplifting anthem. I pictured her coming out on the stage and just owning it. And that's how the song made me feel. This was my walkout music. It was a personally powerful anthem, but I had no idea exactly how powerful it actually was. Nile Rodgers also said that a very famous DJ warned Diana Ross. He said, do not release this song. This will ruin your career. Because he said that people would think that she was coming out, that she was gay. And Nile Rodgers said, it's the only time that he's ever lied to an artist. Because he's like, no, no, you're fine. That's not what it means. You're okay.
Oh.
And then he just crossed his fingers, right? He had actually written it because of her gay following, but he said that it should be her coming out song, like to start her gigs. And that's exactly what it turned into. Still to this day is the song. It is her walkout music. It is her coming out mm-hmm. onto the stage music. And if you think about it, it's pretty shocking that it didn't become more controversial at the time. It is overt. I'm coming out, but you know, as far as I knew, it wasn't controversial at all. Right.
No.
No. And I think for that exact reason of her using it as her entry song, mm-hmm. I actually saw her in 1983. My friend and I, I've shared, we had this Diana Ross obsession. She was playing a casino in Atlantic City, and our dads gave this gift to us to go to the concert for graduation presents. So they drove us down there. They hung out in the casino, and she and I went. It was, you know, one of those where we sat in like a booth.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a much smaller venue. And that's exactly what she did. She's not on the stage and the lights go down, and she kind of, you know, how she almost speaks it like, I'm coming.
Oh my God.
And then she does. And it's just the way she uses it. So I think from the get-go, that's how she used it too yeah. in her performances. So it didn't really, it just, at least mm-hmm. for me, and I think most people, just signaled she's coming out on the stage. She's yeah. presenting herself. Oh my gosh. And she is so great in concert. And she came, I think I told you guys this story, but she, you know, comes out into the audience and walks around, and she was with us right near us for Reach Out and Touch Somebody's Hand. And
so she does that.
Yes. And one of her fingernails went flying off like under our table. And like, I don't know where it went, but yeah.
I would have eaten that fingernail if it would have fallen in my soup.
Framed it.
I think I told you guys I was going to go. She was here at Red Rocks just this past June. And I mean, I was like, this is my last chance to see Diana Ross. And I pulled mm-hmm, up her set list. It was amazing. And it was just one of those. I was like, I'm going to wait and just get general admission tickets. And every so often they have concerts at Red Rocks where they don't do general admission. So the entire Red Rocks, which holds, you know, thousands of people, was ticketed, and they were so expensive. Okay, my last category and my last song is, my category is Michelle's emerging music taste / personality, because I was really starting, like I said earlier, to find my groove in songs. It wasn't on my old Donny Osmond records. I mean, for God's sakes, in fifth grade, my friend Lisa and I sat and listened to Scott Baio's album for hours on end. So thank God my music taste was evolving, right? And I, like I said earlier too, since in the songs, episode 136, Songs That Made Us Junior High Edition, I was able to pick songs, and I already picked Rock This Town by the Stray Cats and Our Lips Are Sealed by the Go-Go's, which totally was my emerging music taste and personality. So today I'm picking
General.
The Tide Is High by Blondie.
Yes. Oh, I love it.
This is more end of 81 for me, middle school dances, but very singable. We knew all the lyrics. But again, you guys, this is Romantic Michelle. Also, it's like I already knew I was going to be the unseen one. I really didn't know it, but the lyrics to the song, this was hugely foretelling to what was going to happen to me in junior and senior year of high school. The whole every girl wants you to be her man, oh, yeah. But I'll wait, my dear, till it's my turn.
I'm not just the kind of girl.
I'm not the kind of girl.
Oops, sorry.
Who gives up just like that? Oh, no. And so those lyrics, like I felt them already. Mm-hmm. It's like I already knew that was going to be my story. It was. But like, and also with, just like with Endless Love, I mean, I could really pour myself into singing this song in front of my mirror. And I also remember, I feel like I remember. So this is more of a feeling than a memory, but middle school dances. I feel like I'm hearing this song at middle school mm-hmm. dances. But I know Lisa and I loved this song, and we sing this a lot. So yeah, that's my mm-hmm. third choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, my third choice, I picked Morning Train by Sheena Easton.
Baby takes the morning train. He works from 9 till 5, and then he takes another home again.
This song represents any of those fun, peppy, boppy songs, and we talked about a lot of those last week in our episode. But this is when I'm driving. I got my driver's license the fall of 1981. So all of a sudden I have a little autonomy over what I'm listening to, and I can change the stations, and I can sing really loud because I'm not a good singer. And so I wasn't going to be doing that at home because my dad would come in and say, shh. So I could, I could bop. I could sing. They were happy. I was happy. I had this new freedom. And so any of those Sheena Easton happy songs, would be included. The Tide Is High would be another example. I'm Coming Out. I mean, all of those that mm-hmm. That are kind of fun would be me just driving along thinking, this is it. Oh. I mean, I'm driving. I mean, what's next?
Yeah.
Exactly. You know? Look out, world. Just,
mm-hmm. That's exactly mm-hmm. right.
I have changed my tune. I used to feel that it was very important that a kid would buy their own first car. I was not in favor of people buying cars for their children. And most people can't buy cars for their children, right? And so I just thought it was an important part of being an adult, you know, saving money and buying your own car. But I've changed my tune on that kind of because of what you just said, Carolyn, particularly for girls, because I feel like my version of your boyfriend, I feel so much of that, my attachment to him was the fact that he was my escape from the house. He was my transportation. I didn't have access to my own transportation. And when you're coming of age, you are for the first time wanting to fly the coop, and you need a way to do that. You need a vehicle. You can't. And if you don't, then they're going to depend on other people. Mm-hmm. And they may not be the people that you want them depending on.
That's right. And I did not have my own car, but we did have two cars in my house. And so I would be belting out the song in a dark green Buick LeSabre. Like nothing at all remotely cool about it or whatever. But man, was I having fun singing. That's where I could mm-hmm. pretend. Yep. Like, no, this really is a cool, you know, convertible or whatever. Yep. But no.
The car that I had access to was a white Chevy Caprice Classic wagon.
Mm-hmm. And that was wagon.
Just not, the station wagon. And it mm-hmm. was just such an injustice for me that I had. And it's not like my friends had nice cars. Shannon had the bomb and Jackie had the Batmobile. Everybody mm-hmm. had shitty cars. But for some reason, driving around a station wagon just felt like a slap in the face to me. Like, what if somebody sees me?
I had to drive in high school. I had to drive. This is so weird too that my mom, because it was just me and my mom, that my mom had this car. I had to drive her around a silver Plymouth Voyager. It was a minivan.
A minivan? Where did the minivan come from? Yeah, in
that
those
was
days?
Early on adoption.
It had to. Well, look at
that. It was like the first generation.
Well, no, we're talking like 1986, 87.
So I think that was first generation.
Look at
that.
Like,
right,
it's the Plymouth
first
Voyager.
Generation. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
You're right.
I didn't get a car until I was oh my gosh, was I a junior in college? Probably. And I had to because I was student teaching.
Yeah, I didn't get a car until I needed transportation for a job, which was after I graduated.
I got our family, well, my dad's car, because my mom never really learned how to drive it because it was a stick. And so it was a Mercury Capri. And he said, you can have this if you learn how to drive it. And my high school or my college roommate came one summer for a while, and she taught me how to drive.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I got that car.
Yep.
So, yeah. My sister had a little Volkswagen Rabbit. It was so old. It was supposed to be ours to share, but she didn't live at home or anything. But I had to learn how to drive that stick. Mm-hmm. And I just remember me and Melanie, like, in the streets of Scottsdale, Arizona, like late at night, her trying to, and I'm just stalling.
At least we learned in places like Arizona and Texas where it's mostly flat.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it was, you know, a hill. It was the worst when you have to stop on a hill, like in a parking garage.
I would start shaking.
Rolling backwards. And then
Welcome to my world.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
but
you're like a saint.
Listen, I haven't driven a stick in years, but I know I could do it. I could drive a stick easily. Because then my first car
like
was
riding
a stick.
A bike. Yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I dream about it sometimes that I'm driving
one.
Yeah,
do you really?
I miss it sometimes.
I miss it. I really do miss it.
Do they still make them?
Yeah, but you have to special order it. I have a friend who special orders her stick shift.
Wow. Why would she want to have one? I mean, like...
Well, it's actually her husband who is the one who's a stickler for the stick shift. And he's a stickler for the stick shift. I think he enjoys it. And I think it's a point of pride, right?
Okay.
Like wanting to preserve something. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't do it, nobody's going to do it. And then they're going to go away.
Yeah. Wow. Good for him.
Okay. My last song is one that we talked a lot about yesterday, but it's worth revisiting.
Last week.
Yep, is when, and it was actually today. It was actually an hour ago.
Shh.
Is when
everybody forget you heard that.
Is when we revisited last week, but it is worth coming back to Too Much Time on My Hands by Styx. This song was popular in the summer after seventh grade, and it graces a very mundane but obviously memorable moment of my summer. I was at church camp and feeling extremely uncool. So uncool. I had just introduced myself to my cabin mates as an introvert. We had to go around the circle and introduce ourselves and share an interesting fact about ourselves. And I told them that I was an introvert, which they thought was a disease of some kind.
I was going to say, I didn't even know how to say that word.
They didn't, which is that. So it gets worse. So then I have to define it for them, which then makes me even less cool because now I'm the smarty pants. I'm like the vocab nerd, right? I was the girl who used big words.
So also describing it as such, like, I like to be by myself. I like to
She's a barrel of monkeys. How'd we luck out and get her in our cabin?
I was owning my shtick, but it wasn't taking on the cachet that I thought it would. And then as I'm sitting alone by the campfire.
As I'm strapped to a canoe in the middle of the lake at 2 a.m.
alone by myself. I see one of the cool girls walk by with her pod, her little pod of friends, right? And she goes, just as she's walking, very casually, she goes, too much time on my hands.
What?
And it was a moment of clarity for me. This is why she's one of the cool girls. She can just roll that out completely unencumbered by worry about whether or not she looks dumb. She can pull that off. And so then I was like, okay, all right.
Oh, no.
I'm going to start doing this on a very, like, a much smaller scale. I would just throw it out as I walked across camp, like, too much.
I'm so sorry that I'm laughing, but all I'm picturing is like a Little Darlings type movie.
Yes.
And like now as adults watching it, we would watch that cool girl do that and just cringe for her. Like, oh God, we see what she was doing. And then we would see the little Kristen
trying to copy.
Thinking that I'm going to do it now too.
I just want to hug you. I know. I was learning. I mean, the truth is, It's possible I was doing it silently and almost invisibly. I thought it was big.
Okay.
But it could have been that I was so worried that I couldn't quite do it audibly. But I'm working
so
on
sad.
It.
I could just see you going around like kind of like talking to yourself before, and then going. People are like,
you guys can't see us. Girl, ladies, let's not forget this is not a visual medium.
Right.
Let me just explain now to the listeners. They're both kind of making a little cringe face and like shrugging their shoulders up as they walk, like whispering.
But I was so envious of her freedom because I had that in me, right? I did that in my bedroom. I was loud in my bedroom.
Yeah.
My body was loud in my bedroom, but out in front of people, everybody's eyes just paralyzed me, right? And everybody's eyes were not paralyzing her for some reason. So I was like, I'm going to own this too. And instead of owning the introvert thing, why don't I own this? So, and did it work? Kind of. Like, I will say it was a stepping stone to me becoming louder. It was not a failure. But it was a learning moment for me. So just a month later, in August of 1981, MTV went on the air, and Too Much Time on My Hands got a whole new surge of popularity because the video for the song went into heavy rotation after it peaked on the charts. It peaked on the charts before MTV came on because Too Much Time on My Hands was one of the only videos that MTV had from an American band. It was all they had. And like we talked about last week, Michelle, like, laid out the video for us in all of its mundane ridiculousness with watches and everybody looking at their watches.
The girls wearing leotards, but then with jeans. Top is just a spandex tight with
your
no bra.
Your dance skin. It's your dance skin. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it was all they had from an American band. So that got heavy rotation, no matter how good or bad it was. And the song even got more popular. And then it was revived again in 2016, after Jimmy Fallon heard the song on the radio and just got super excited and called his friend Paul Rudd and asked him to film a recreation of that video, a shot-by-shot reenactment of this video that Michelle described for us last week. So Jimmy Fallon and Paul Rudd's version of Too Much Time on My Hands aired on April 29th, 2016, and people went nutty. And to date, it is still one of the funniest things I have ever seen. The earnestness with which they portrayed these like long-haired 80s
counterparts. I don't feel like I've seen it. Do they have the guy selling the watches with his jacket?
Yes, they do. Literally. They literally reenact the whole
video.
Well,
we need to put that in
Weekly
Reader, and I'm going to go find it as soon as we are done here.
Same,
so funny.
Because I love Paul
Too much time on my hands. Okay, you guys, I'm sure, so you picked your three songs, but you have runners up, right? Were there some that you wanted to talk about, but there's just no time?
Yeah, I'll just kind of run down the list.
Okay.
I did actually mention last week how much I love 9 to 5, just so singable. And so that was on my list. Hit Me With Your Best Shot was on my list. Just Pat Benatar just oozed coolness, but that
icon.
Also so singable for us in sixth grade, like at recess as we're playing Foursquare, we can sing it.
Yep.
You guys, you might be shocked that the next two that I picked, The Stroke by Billy Squier.
I love it. I love
well,
The Stroke.
Well, it's so, and you felt, and I still love that song.
Stroke me.
Well, and then here's the reason it's on is because that almost made it into my top three because it was middle school dance.
Mm-hmm.
But also you're realizing or you're hearing from other people what this means. And you're like, oh, my God, that we feel
like,
so naughty because I'm only in sixth grade. So like I said at the very beginning,
that can't be
I'm
true.
Starting to evolve in what we, you know, what we know, what things used to go over our heads. And then my last one, I picked Another One Bites the Dust because something about this song always takes me back to that time. And I'm certain it was played, dances. TV sports events, like if you had football games on, I don't know, that just became an anthem, didn't it?
Yeah.
In 1981 and 82 for so many different things.
Yeah.
I love, love, love that song.
I do too.
I will say that I was surprised about 5 years ago when I realized it was Queen. I, in my head, always thought it was someone like AC/DC or something.
Oh, you did? That's funny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it was as an adult that I did come to that realization as well. It just didn't go along with the songs I thought of Queen, you know, that Queen sang for some reason. Okay. Well, everyone, do not fear because Carol did get a little bit of a say.
Okay, Carol.
Yes.
So your alter ego.
Yes. I made it through the rain.
I made it through the rain.
From our friend Barry Manilow.
Yeah, okay.
And you can only imagine, you know, when I'm feeling sorry for myself and all of that, that song can really hit a spot. So, yeah, another one that gives me some feelings when I hear it. Keep on Loving You by REO Speedwagon. Mm-hmm. This is when REO Speedwagon just kind of got on my...
Forever.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I picked Just the Two of Us, but it really impacted me the following year because it was my prom theme the spring of my junior year. And then a song that will forever touch me, and I see a whole movie play in my head. I've talked about it before, so I won't give it a lot of time, except to say that it's Same Old Lang Syne by Dan Fogelberg.
Yeah.
My old lover in the grocery store, the snow was calling Christmas Eve.
So
I love that song.
It's so
you
good.
Know what, Carolyn? I feel like you mentioned that early in season
one, sad songs.
Songs that make us cry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because I did a deep dive on the history of the song. Mm-hmm. And I love that song.
I do too. It's such a pretty song. Okay, I'm going to try and be brief because, of course, I have way too much to say. I always have too much to say. And so here's my runners-up list. The first one I put on my list is because I brought it up once and neither one of you had ever heard of it. But it was a number one hit.
Oh, I know. I know.
And I know that people are going to get Husker Dude so hard. My first runner-up is Stars on 45 by Stars on 45.
Let's do it! You gotta beat the clock. You gotta beat the clock.
It's a medley of mostly Beatles songs, but not exclusively, which is really weird.
Right.
All recorded, again, over a disco beat, just like Hooked on Classics, like we talked about last week in the Grammy episode. It was weird and long and awkward, and it's this. It was a phenomenon in the halls of Fred Moore Junior High. It was everywhere. It almost felt like it was a science experiment, like a Frankenstein song or something. It was cobbled together by producers, not by an actual band. That's why the song was called Stars on 45 by Stars on 45. But the actual title of Stars on 45 is, it's all the names of the songs in the medley for legal reasons. So the title is, and this is printed on the 45 of Stars on 45 by Stars on 45. Intro, Venus, Sugar, Sugar, No Reply, I'll Be Back, Drive My Car, Do You Want to Know a Secret? We Can Work It Out, I Should Have Known Better, You're Gonna Lose That Girl, Stars on 45. That's the title. It's 41 words. It's the longest title of any single to make the Hot 100.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So my next one is the first song, the first number one song, the first hit song that featured rapping. Do you know what that is?
No.
No.
Rapture by Blondie.
Oh, yes. Of course.
Rapper's Delight did crack the top 100 but in 1979, but Debbie Harry took rap all the way to the number one spot. She's a white lady, and the lyrics were completely nonsensical, but it is historic nonetheless.
Yeah.
With men from Mars eating cars, and they shoot you dead, and then he eats your head, and then you're in the man from Mars, and you go out at night, and there's something cars, and you eat Cadillacs, and Lincolns, and
Mercurys,
and Subarus, and you don't stop, you keep on eating cars. And there is this little nasty part that that sounds like something else, but when it's printed, it always says finger popping. But when you listen to it, it sounds like something else.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Mm.
God, I love that song so much. And I just love the image of like Debbie Harry like skipping through the alley and all the people following. And she's talking about the eating cars and the Mercurys and Subaru.
And you don't stop. You keep on eating cars. Then when there's no more cars, you go out at night and eat on the bars.
I love it. It's so weird. Burn Rubber on Me by the Gap Band. The first time I heard the song Burn Rubber on Me was at a dance competition, and it involved 12-year-old girls in sequined motorcycle gear doing a lot of pantomiming of rooming their motorcycles, their invisible motorcycles. But no matter, because I was hooked. I love that song, and it's still one of my favorite songs of all time. Do you guys remember Suddenly by Olivia Newton-John and Cliff Richard?
Yes.
I do.
Oh,
suddenly.
the wheels of emotion.
But you know what I also remember? Andy Gibb sang it on Solid Gold.
Yes,
he did. Was it with her?
Or was it with Marie Osmond?
Oh, was it with Marie?
I think it was with Marie.
I think it was with Marie. It's yeah, such maybe a she good wouldn't song, and the two of them together. That's a little Endless Lovey for me. I really love it. You said The Stroke by Billy Squire. Double Dutch Bus. The Double Dutch Bus.
Double Dutch Bus coming down the street. Moving dirty fast. So gotta shuffle your feet. Get on the bus. Pay your fare. Then tell a driver that you going to a double dutch.
And my last one is It's a Love Thing. By The Whispers. This is one of those songs that I would dance to in my room. Like with jumps and everything. Yeah. Like it's not, I'm not just boogieing. I'm like doing choreo.
Yeah.
In my room by myself.
Fouette turns. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. The one that I found on some list, and I just checked, it's not on Billboard Hot 100, which is shocking. What is the song? And I'm not going to say the right title. Something like, forget about it. It's like a
Shut Up Your Face.
That was 1981.
Was it really?
It was on one of my, okay, now I'm going to look at it. Yes, it was on one of the lists that came up.
Why you look so sad? Something, something, something is not so bad.
Here it is. Shut Up Your Face, song by Joe Dolce, 1981. It was released. And it was in one of the top song list. And I was like, oh, Kristen's picking that as one of her.
I didn't even see that.
Shut Up Your Face.
Shut Up Your Face. Ah, Shut Up Your Face.
So funny.
Oh, my God. Once again, you guys, thank you for coming to therapy with us. Music therapy. This is our little music therapy episode. I always feel better after sharing these episodes. Like I've purged my demons and I've found solace among other scarred, formerly pubescent Gen Xers. And pairing it with music just proves what a big role that it played in our lives, both as a soundtrack and as a balm. And listening to those songs now can help us go back in time and heal those little pollywogs, right? Isn't that what our therapists say? Like, talk to your inner child and say, you're good. That's all over. That's not now, and you're okay.
But Kristen, also, I'm just going to pop in the middle of this, but when you were saying that girl was walking around seemingly the cool girl to you, but I bet she didn't, you know, you never know what's going on in some of but she's walking around and just presenting this music lyric from a really cool song. To her, that was healing something, or that was filling in a hole somehow. For her. Yeah. And look then what it did to you. You gained confidence just by walking around going, even if you were kind of going, too much time on my head. It was therapizing you. And I use that word on purpose, because in my lexicon, that's a word I use, therapizing. Mm-hmm. But it was giving you a tool, and it was giving her a tool, and very different ones. Well, or the very same one.
Yeah.
But just like music does so much. And that's why that is a whole major. Like my college roommate's
that should be a field of study.
Is about to graduate. Mm-hmm. She is in music therapy, and in right now, like the practicums and stuff, she's going to hospitals and she's using music as therapy. And I know some of our listeners and some of our patrons are in, that is their field. You know, music as therapy. So.
And I love the way that you say that. Like this song was affecting two people at the same moment in time who were not related, right? We were not, it was like, it's a game of pass it on. Pass it on. Yeah. Pass on the healing. Thanks to everyone from our generation for being pubescent with us. And thanks to you, the listeners, for being here with us today. Big hugs, and we will see you next time.
And as we always do at the end of our episodes, we are giving a special thank you to our Patreon members who take their support of our podcast and all the things we do with the Pop Culture Preservation Society to the next level with their monthly donations. Today, we're giving a special shout out to patrons Sharon, Cindy, Diane, Colette, Kelly, Sharon. Gosh, Sharon and Amy and all these names that we see on repeat, right?
All the time.
Susan, Barbara, Elaine, and our friend Helene. And if you'd like to take your support to the next level and check out our all the perks that our patrons get as a thank you, you can just go to patreon.com, patreon.com, and type in Pop Culture Preservation Society up in the little search box. And you can just explore our page and see the different levels and things you get.
Yeah. And you can also support us by sharing the podcast with friends, sharing it on social media, and also rating and reviewing wherever you listened to the Pop Culture Preservation Society. It really helps us out, and we really appreciate it.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. Two good times.
Two happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers.
Cheers.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you.